it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History.
Win.
We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
It's the Cape Cod Central Takeover Hour with Chris Clark, Wes Mitchell, and Tyler Head on your home of the Gamecocks in Columbia. 107.5 The Game on 100.3 The Game in Myrtle Beach and 100.5 The Game in Florence.
Welcome in. It is the Gamecock Central Takeover Hour presented by Firehouse Subs. Tyler Head, Wes Mitchell, Chris Clark along with you on this Monday morning. Plenty to react to, Chris. We're not used to sitting this close together.
We're not. It's a little different.
A little different. We're shaking it up here. That's all right.
I'm uncomfortable. Wes sitting in between us this time.
I don't smell bad, do I?
No, you don't. I might.
I think I'm all right. Put on my deodorant this morning. But regardless, a very, very busy weekend on a lot of fronts. Got plenty to get to. Obviously, Gamecock baseball with a big series win over Kentucky, as well as several Gamecocks getting their name called in the NFL draft. I just talked with Mike Yuba in that last hour of great to see so many of those guys getting drafted, as well as many of them, you know, picking up undrafted free agent contracts as well with respective NFL teams. But, you know, the headline of the weekend, we talked about Xavier Legette plenty on Friday with him going in the first round on Thursday night, but a lot of conversation around Spencer Rattler having to wait a little bit longer than we thought he was going to have to, going in the fifth round, 150th pick overall, to the New Orleans Saints, a situation that is pretty good overall, as we feel like that's a place that he could go in there and make an impact, potentially find his way into a starting role, but unfortunately fell a couple rounds later than we thought he was going to.
You know, Spencer was the guy. I was thinking about this earlier. It kind of played out most of the draft exactly like we thought. We knew Xavier Legette was going to be the first guy up and that he was going to be either very late round one or pretty early round two. And so that ends up happening. In fact, Panthers, you know, trade up to get him.
Right.
So he goes late round one. You figured the next guy was going to be Spencer somewhere in that mid-round range. Then Marcellus would be probably fifth, sixth, and then Garjulo, if he got drafted, would be probably seventh or a priority undrafted free agent. And so all those things happen, right? Dial six, Garjulo seven. With Spencer, he was the one where it was kind of a little bit tougher. Now, one reason for that is because he's a quarterback.
Yeah.
And so you kind of expect the unexpected in the draft for quarterbacks. You'll see guys go higher than you think. You'll see guys slide. And then another part was just Spencer was, when I say polarizing, I don't mean that in a negative sense at all. It was kind of, there were different opinions on where he might go. And it looked like at first, guys, that, okay, you get through the first round, you get through 12 picks, and there's, what, six quarterbacks taken?
Yep.
Right, this is a dream scenario for Spencer and for Joe Milton and for Michael Pratt from Tulane. You're like, this sets up perfect, man, because if a team needs a quarterback, now, even if they didn't want to, they might feel like, well, we got to go a little bit higher here. Instead, Spencer was literally the next guy up.
Fourth.
But you went from pick 12, Bo Nix,
yep,
to pick 150.
The longest gap in NFL history between quarterbacks being taken.
And that was crazy. And, you know, and I know we'll get into this, and I know, Wes, you have some opinions on this, as do I, and I'm sure Tyler does too. The reasoning,
sure,
that was stated, restated again by more than one national reporter. It was a longer wait. You know, it was on the back end of the wait that you would expected, but he's got an opportunity, and I think he'll make the most of it.
And Wes, you know, this is a team in the Saints that we talked about leading up to the draft that we thought, you know, Spencer Rattler could potentially go to maybe in one of those early rounds, but regardless, ends up there in the fifth round. And, you know, that's a very crowded quarterback room. But reading, you know, some of the people that cover this team on the daily, there's a lot of thoughts that Spencer Rattler could make some serious noise with the Saints right away.
Yeah, I mean, guys, I think at the end of the day, it maybe ends up working out
somewhat okay for Spencer. I mean, I think obviously we all sat there and you kind of felt bad for him as it played out, because like Chris detailed, when this thing started, you were saying this is playing out perfectly for Spencer Rattler. And then, you know, I think it just sort of droned on and on and on. You're like, all right, at what point is the guy going to get drafted? And, you know, I think this is something we've seen Spencer in his time at South Carolina use doubters as kind of a chip on his shoulder. I think this is something that, not that he needed any extra motivation anyway, but something he can use to maybe fuel him even more. But I do think I always kind of felt that if he could go to a place that had maybe an older quarterback who was kind of established as the starter, but maybe was not solidified as a top-tier starter in the NFL, or maybe just had a couple of years left, maybe that would be a good situation. And that's kind of what you end up with there, you know, with Derek Carr as the quarterback. So maybe not the worst scenario for Spencer Rattler. And guys, real quick, y'all mentioned Leggett. I don't consider myself an NFL expert, but last week I made the comment that I didn't really understand why the Panthers traded up one spot into the first round. Well, doing some reading after our show on Friday, I did want to point out there was a very specific reason for that, and that's because first round picks, that first deal actually can go 5 years instead of 4 years. So there was a very specific reason that the Panthers wanted to go ahead and lock Leggett in officially as a first rounder as opposed to a second rounder, even if it was really the only difference of one pick.
No, good. That's good reporting there, Wes.
There you go. Yeah, it's almost like it's your job or something.
Yeah.
I should have known that beforehand, but that I watched the Panthers press conference after the fact, and Dan Morgan, who Chris and I watched be a stud linebacker for the Panthers back in the day, is now basically like running the show when Tepper isn't interrupting him, I'm sure. But, you know, I think to hear that, I was like, okay, that makes complete sense. So as big as those wide receiver contracts are getting these days in terms of free agents, essentially that allows the Panthers to have him on that rookie deal for one extra year as a – I think it's written as a team option. Don't quote me on that.
That's correct. I think that's right.
Yeah. Yeah, so that did make complete sense. But yeah, guys, back to Spencer. I do think at the end of the day that it may end up working out for him. And Chris, Tyler, I wanted to get y'all's thoughts on Shane Beamer basically having to – it got to the point he had to respond to some of the reporting from the NFL draft, quote-unquote, experts from what these teams were leaking to them about why Spencer was dropping. And I mean, it almost like, not to be a complete homer, but it's almost just laughable to me that we are still talking on ESPN of all places, not random people on Twitter, that we're still talking about a Netflix show from when Spencer Rattler was 17 years old and was obviously just an immature kid at the time.
It seems like, yeah, I think you make a good point. It's like, you know, you log on to like Twitter and you'll see like the Oklahoma fans that are still mad, or like Georgia, Tennessee, Clemson, you know, and they might say those same things. I saw Spencer on that Netflix show, you know, like people that have never met him, never interacted with him. And here's the more important thing, right? Whatever you thought of that show, how many years ago was that?
So, because he came out in the 2019 class.
Yeah,
and
that's right.
I'm assuming that a lot of that stuff was done. I watched the entire show, but I'm assuming a lot of that was done prior to his senior year of high school. So we're talking about
7 years ago.
Fall of 2018?
Yeah.
Somewhere around there?
So we've got to stop doing the thing. And this is like a, we won't turn this into like a political show, but like from a societal standpoint, you're now expected to be like perfect.
Sure.
And we cannot show growth.
And here's the thing, you know, to me. I understand these scouts and these people within the organizations wanting to vet all of these draft picks to the umpteenth degree to make sure they're getting the right guy in their organization and they're not going to have any problems. But it's insane to me that you can't expect somebody to have grown. And again, I've, you know, had the opportunity to be in here with Rattler for our shows and see him, you know, around the studio a couple times. You guys have obviously spent a lot more time with him, but you ask anybody close to this program here at South Carolina, they will tell you, and Wes, you can speak to this as well, it's a night and day difference from who that kid was 6-7 years ago and who the guy is now that got drafted on Saturday.
Yeah, and so for anybody who's around like me and Chris's age, do y'all ever have so Facebook became a thing when I was like just getting into college. Mm-hmm. And you know the little thing on Facebook where it's sort of like 15 years ago you posted this status. And do y'all ever
cringe.
Read that thing and just,
oh,
be,
yeah.
and just be like, I'm about to delete this, even though it's from 15 years ago?
It happens every time. All the time, dude.
But and it's not even like I said anything bad. Like, you know, but just like I'm cringing, like, what a moron. Like, who? What was I talking about? And so, like, I can't imagine being like, I can't imagine the public having any video of me when I was a junior, and like we all are cringeworthy at that age. Like, and I don't know. It's just it's silly to me to even think about that affecting someone's draft stock when it wasn't like I get it if the guy like committed a crime or something or just did something that was just you know that he's a complete disaster to society or something like that maybe is one thing, but just to oh he was an immature kid. And has admitted in interviews, like, hey, you know, I've grown up since then. Like, I don't know. I don't get it. And also, I see people saying, well, of course the staff, of course Shane Beamer, of course those guys are going to come to the defense of Spencer Rattler. So there's this thing called silence. And if the staff did not feel the way they do about Spencer Rattler and they were deep down in the back of their minds thinking, yeah, some of these things are correct, they would just be quiet. They would just be silent. They would not feel the need to come to his aid. You see lots of, I thought it was interesting too, guys, seeing several of the SEC network and kind of ESPN analysts that are more regional and have covered South Carolina throughout the last 2 years as well, sort of come to Spencer Rattler's aid online as well. Just be like, this is not the same person you witnessed when he was 17 years old or whatever it was. Consummate professional is Chris. I know you can speak to this man. He has carried himself like an NFL quarterback from the moment you and I first interviewed him right after he announced his transfer to South Carolina.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't even, it's one thing to be like, you know, Pete Tamel and Ian Rappaport should not have gone on TV and said that. Right. But you know what? I tend to think it's just more lazy work on the part of the scouts. You know, like, they didn't call over to the building and ask. Now, maybe they did, and maybe, you know, Ian Rappaport in his quote even said, it's unbelievable to me that this many scouts mentioned it.
Sure.
And it's like, okay, it is kind of unbelievable.
They were passing along the information they were given. It wasn't them saying
they're
that.
Trying to explain it. And, you know, yeah. Will we ever really know? Because remember, Pete Tamel's tweet, the first thing was, concern about his height mm-hmm. and a 5.0 40, which that seems kind of ridiculous to me. Both of them, especially the 40.
We know he's not a speed demon.
Yeah, but I mean, he can run a little. So which one of those is it? I don't know. I would have, if the scouts came out and said, which I don't agree with this, but they would have said, you know what? We just don't think he's that good.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, good. But like, if you say, I just can't get that vision out of my head. Well, can you get the things out of your head with people who've actually been like committed crimes and arrested, like Wes said, and then you still employ those people a lot of the time in the NFL.
That's the thing to me, and Preston and I were talking about this on the early game this morning, and I'd completely forgotten about this. His name popped in my head. Y'all remember Randy Gregory coming out of Nebraska?
Oh, yeah.
And all of the red flags around him? He dropped to the second round.
Yeah.
Baker Mayfield got arrested when he was at Oklahoma. Still first overall pick. Like, yeah. It's so funny the type of things that get overlooked, and then, you know, you say something, which, by the way, again, let's put ourselves in Spencer Rattler's shoes as a 17-year-old, five-star, projected as the best quarterback in America coming out of high school. Yeah, you probably have a little bit of an ego. Yeah, your head's probably a little bit big at that point in time, so you probably say some things that you probably regret years down the line, but again, this dude's a completely different person now. And again, you guys can speak to it more than I can, but just in the interactions that I've had with him, very kind, very humble, very nice, and carries himself in a good way, that I think he's going to be an immaculate professional and is going to be able to have a long career in the NFL as well.
Yeah, I mean, he did everything right at South Carolina for the 2 years he was here. You know, I can honestly say I didn't hear anything negative. And all our interactions with him, what you hear in that building, and that spoke volumes. I mean, Wes hit on this earlier, but when your coach goes on social media and defends you don't have to do that. And in fact, it very much behooves a college coach to be honest about his guys.
Sure.
So that when, you know, when they're contacting you saying, what do you think? You don't want to be lying about it. And Shane Beamer's a believer.
More to unpack from the draft weekend for Gamecocks coming up next. Gamecocks Central Takeover Hour presented by Firehouse Subs here in the game. Welcome back in. It is the Gamecocks Central Takeover Hour presented by Firehouse Subs. Tyler Head, Wes Mitchell, and Chris Clark along with you. Reacting to all things draft, again, we impact a lot of the Spencer Rattler conversation there in that first segment. He was not the last Gamecock to come off the board, though. A couple guys getting picked up in later rounds. Marcellus Dial going in the sixth round to the New England Patriots. And then Nick Arzullo, the penultimate pick of the draft, not quite Mr. Irrelevant, but almost, going in the seventh round to the Denver Broncos. And these are a couple guys that we knew were going to get drafted at some point over the weekends, and obviously being in the later rounds, do have a little bit of a hill to climb there by making the team and competing for spots, but good to see both those guys get their name called over the course of the weekend.
Yeah, that was, you know, really happy for both of those guys, and I was thinking about this earlier, you know, Marcellus Dial was a guy that even out of junior college, and Wes, you know, definitely adds some context to this, but junior college kid out of Georgia military, originally from Woodruff, and he was like a low three-star guy on the recruiting services after he got to junior college. You know, this was a guy that was kind of an unknown, like in high school, goes out to junior college, just continually gets better and better. And then even by the time he got to South Carolina, you could see, you know, the progression of Marcellus Dial to where, you know, 2022. Again, remember that 2022 team, they had Darius Rush, Cam Smith, a couple guys playing in the league. Marcellus Dial was basically your third corner. He ended up playing more snaps than both of those guys. And at that point, with how he finished the year, you're like, okay, this is the guy that's going to step in 2023. He's going to be the guy. He's going to be the lead corner, and he's going to have a chance to go play in the league. And super happy for him to get that opportunity as well.
Yeah, guys, I was very curious to see where Sell would go, because I thought he was another one of those guys I thought could maybe move up a little bit, maybe higher than there where he ended up going. I thought he actually quietly had a really good final year at South Carolina, and that's a position. You know, you make a mistake and people notice you, or you sit over there and lock down your guy for an entire game and nobody even mentions you if they don't really kind of dive into the film. And so, you know, I think for him, he's going to probably have a chance to stick in the league. There's 100 different variables that will determine your success. But I do think there's a lot to like about Dial's opportunity in the NFL. And then, you know, Nicky G, too, for a late-round pick, I did wonder – I was going to say, first of all, this is a guy who has the experience at Yale where he's at some point in his career played center, guard, and tackle. Now, I think he's definitely more of an interior guy at the NFL, but just having that experience, the fact he went to Yale, you assume that you're getting a pretty sharp guy. Then you meet him and you're like, all right, this guy is way smarter than I am. So I think that kind of plays well for him at the next level but these NFL teams, they have such limited rosters going into a game week. So having a guy who kind of has that complete understanding of the entire offensive line, could maybe go play another position on the line in sort of a pinch for you. And obviously is going to be a good leader, good off the field guy as well. That probably plays well, I think, for Nick G. And I'm curious, I wonder if there was a little bit of, as we know, Greg Adkins' son plays for the Broncos, And when you start getting to those late picks, sixth, seventh round, you're taking flyers on guys. You're kind of, all right, we know there's some questions here, but this is what we look for in a guy when we're going to take a chance. I wonder if former South Carolina offensive line coach Greg Atkins, of course, also still on staff, and his knowledge of who Nick G is possibly could have played a role there. Maybe I'm grasping at straws, but it did kind of strike me as interesting that he ends up at Denver.
Absolutely. And I talked about this with Mike Yuva in the last hour. You know, this draft as a whole, you know, a good, showing for South Carolina, getting four guys drafted in multiple different spots. But I think Orzulo in particular is very interesting because, again, he's a guy that comes in from Yale, you know, going from FCS to the SEC is a sizable jump. And he was able to come in here and prove himself and do good enough to get drafted. And I think that is something that is enticing to potential guys looking to transfer into South Carolina that, hey, you can come here, prove yourself, and get the opportunity to play at the next level like Nick Orzulo did.
Yeah, absolutely. And it goes to show that, you know, you don't want to – if you recruited an entire roster of guys from FCS or from the Ivy League, then you're going to have an Ivy League program. But every single year in the NFL, you know, whether it's drafted guys or guys you're sitting there watching Monday Night Football and here's a guy from some tiny school or an Ivy League or an FCS out there making plays – even in the year 2024, it has never, like, the data has never been better. Shannon Terry from On3 was talking about this a lot over the weekend. In the first round of the draft, there are a lot of guys where you look back and go, that guy was a five-star out of high school. And so this isn't the 1980s where you're sending VHS tapes and you're having to definitely go scout guys in person. The amount of data that we have is better than it's ever been. But half of those first-round guys are probably still going to bust, you know, at some point or another. And you're still going to have guys, whether it's round one, round four, round seven, or undrafted free agents, who are going to end up being really, really good football players at literally the highest level. So, you know, when they took Nick Orzulo, you kind of do some research and go, this looks like a guy who might can help. And I remember as soon as he got here and you started hearing some returns from the weight room and then returns from practice, you heard about his toughness and his physicality, obviously had the size, like Wes said, he had the smarts, and so it ended up being a great take. I mean, if you take a guy in recruiting, high school, junior college, portal, whatever, if you take a guy and he plays well for you and then he plays in the league, like, you check that box. Like, right. that was good. That is your goal, to get guys in here who start for you, especially out of the portal, right? You get a guy out of the portal, he's a 1 or 2 year guy, he plays well for you, he goes on to the league. What more can you ask for on that?
Yeah, absolutely. And again, great weekend overall for South Carolina. And again, hopefully it's a good advertisement for this program and enticing to high school recruits and the like who wanted to come in here and obviously have their opportunity to play at the next level. As always, we appreciate all of our sponsors here on the game, the Gamecock Central Takeover Hour, presented by Firehouse Subs. One of those, Wes, is our friends over at Classic Roofing.
Yeah, go on over to ClassicRoofingSC.com. Or you can just give them a call. They're probably listening to the show right now. So you can call them. You can talk about the show with them. And you can talk about your roof. You can do that by hitting 803-590-7870. And what you're going to want to do, you're going to want to do exactly what me and my wife did. That is set up a free estimate at your home. They're going to come out. They're going to climb up on your roof. They're going to get this high-tech drone up there as well. And they're going to look at every single aspect of your roof. And then they're going to tell you, hey, there's a couple of problem areas here. Maybe let's address this. Let's address that. Or it might be, hey, there are no problems whatsoever. And then most importantly, guys, they're going to give you kind of an idea of, hey, this roof has 5 years, 10 years, 15 years left on it. So you and your family can go ahead and be planning for how you can protect that roof, because obviously it is easily one of the most important parts of your home. So again, ClassicRoofingSC.com and 803-590-7870. A huge shout out and thanks to our friends at Classic Roofing.
We'll transition over the diamond. It was an interesting weekend, to say the least, out at Founders Park. We'll dive into that and South Carolina's big series win over the Kentucky Wildcats. Coming up, it's the Gamecock Central Takeover Hour presented by Firehouse Subs on your Monday.
Lawrence. First pitch to Petrie, swung on and skied to deep left center field. The center fielder McCarthy is at the wall. He'll leap. He won't get it. It's out of here, and the Gamecocks passed up a runner on the base pass. Oh, my goodness. Brindling, for some reason, had gone back
to first base. I guess he was thinking he would tag up, and that means Ethan Petrie is out as he passed up Brindley on the base paths. So the Gamecocks will get two runs out of this home run instead of three. Mercy me.
Welcome back in. It's the Gamecock Central Takeover Hour presented by Firehouse Subs. Tyler Ed, Wes Muncher, and Chris Clark along with you. That was Derek Scott on the call. A very weird weekend out at Founders Park, to say the least. Ethan Petrie's almost home run that ended up being just ruled as a single and an unassisted out at first base as he passed Austin Brindling on the base path. Nevertheless, didn't deter South Carolina from winning yesterday's game 10-0 in the final of the three-game set, beating Kentucky in two out of those three games. But, Wes, I know you wanted to lead off on this. A bizarre situation that you don't see come up too much in terms of runners passing each other on the base path.
Very odd. Tyler, I know you you have that memory of yours where you don't forget things. Did you know what the official scoring was going to be on that? Like, did you know how that was scored when it happened?
I did not know that's how it was going to be scored, but it's definitely something that if you're only reading the box score of a game, definitely jumps off the page at you.
Yeah, very, very odd. And I want to say, and first of all, we're gonna get to the weekend that was in terms of the, you know, two out of three, top five team in the country. One of the craziest baseball games I've ever seen on Friday. Then one of the craziest baseball games I've ever seen on Saturday. And then, of course, just out of nowhere, a blowout win on Sunday. Luckily for South Carolina, this play really did not end up mattering other than being a talking point. But I do feel like our guy Austin Brindling is getting a little bit too much heat on social media. A lot of people, what is the guy doing at first? What is going on there? Why is he not running? Why is he in La La Land? And not to pick on Petrie here, but Brindley was actually, I believe, trying to make a heads up play here. Like, if you listen to that call, that ball was skied into the air. It was a long, high fly ball. Typically, you don't always see somebody tag going first to second, but if that outfielder is camped, if you're in a deep enough park and you have enough speed, which we know Brindling does, you sometimes will see guys basically still 90 feet by going back and tagging up on a fly ball to like right center. So I think for Brindling, did it end up looking bad for everybody? Of course, but I think he's been taking a little bit of unnecessary heat on this. As Mark Kingston said after the game, ultimately it is on that trail runner to not pass the guy in front of him. So I think one of the beautiful things about baseball is sometimes you just see something you've never seen before. And this was just a very, very odd timing thing where it just really worked out in an unfavorable way for South Carolina.
And we can laugh about it now because it ultimately didn't end up costing South Carolina. When it happened, I thought, oh God, this game's going to end up coming down to one run and that's going to be the difference in the game. But of course, South Carolina ends up picking up the seven inning run rule victory over, you know, Kentucky in the third game. But it's one of those things that when you go back and watch the replay, as they showed on TV, it's so funny because Petrie's like enjoying the high of seeing it go over the fence, and then immediately realizes he's passed Austin Brindley and realizes, oh no, what have I done? Because he knew the consequences of his actions. But yes, that's more on Petrie, as Kingston said after the game, that, you know, you just got to kind of pay attention to what's going on because that was a long fly ball. So, you know, you do have to understand that Brindley was being safe there and trying to, you know, see if he needed to tag up on that as opposed to just going ahead and running. But, you know, again, didn't end up costing South Carolina, but a learning opportunity nonetheless for Ethan Petrie.
Yeah, it was. And, you know, huge series win because, I mean, South Carolina has played just a juggernaut of a schedule, which will continue. Yep. By the way, they've got three series remaining. You go at Missouri, got Georgia at home, and then at Tennessee. And so it maybe you could say, hey, it lets up a little bit, which is true. You're not playing three top five, top ten opponents, but you know, Missouri swept Florida.
Based on RPI.
Based on RPI, yes. Some really good teams, which will continue. And so this team gets over the 500 mark. They really, guys, have really all their goals in front of them as far as just being able to. Ultimately, you want to be able to host a regional. You know, you've got that in front of you. You're going to have the benefit when it comes to seeding and things like that. Again, as long as they can progress in a positive direction here. you're going to have the benefit of the committee knowing, my goodness, look at this team's strength of schedule. You know, Kentucky was, what, number two in the RPI?
Yep.
They had not been shut out all year. And I think it says something, y'all. I mean, you get to the last game. It's a rubber match. You just had two extremely emotional games that Mark Kingston pointed out. Either of those games could have gone either way. If you're South Carolina or Kentucky, you could have been 2-0 or 0-2 after those games. You split them, you get to a big-time game three, and you're able to not only win it, but win it in a pretty dominant fashion from a pitching and hitting standpoint. It was just kind of a complete performance, I thought.
Yeah, and guys, I think if you look at this series, we may kind of look back on it and be like, that's the one that really springboarded South Carolina into not only the end of conference play, but into postseason play as well. I thought Mark Kingston made a great point, and that was that, look, you talk about sort of these quad one games and how, you know, that can be any team in the top 25, basically. And if you're playing them at home, it's, you know, quad one or whatever. And so his point was, we're not just playing top 25 or top 30 teams. It still all counts as quad one, but South Carolina has been playing top five teams and multiple ones at that. And then, of course, in baseball, you play three-game series. So they're just racking up RPI, building sometimes close losses, sometimes wins along the way. And so I do think when the committee looks back, they're gonna see that. South Carolina, as up and down as this season has been, is building a great case to be a regional host. And I thought something – we saw two things that could have long-term effects from this weekend. One, South Carolina's move to a more offensive-oriented lineup, including, you know, moving a first baseman to third base, a third baseman to shortstop. Now, granted, those guys do have history playing those positions, at least in practice and growing up. But I was kind of questioning, what is Kingston doing here? How much defense have you sacrificed? Those guys answered. There was a great offensive weekend. And then the other thing I'll say, how about guys Dylan Eskew? If he can give South Carolina what he's given them the last 2 weeks, that could be a huge boost for this team that has been looking for consistency from their weekend staff.
Yeah, absolutely. And Eskew, you know, we've gone in these past couple weekend series, as most series, you know, this season with the TBA on Sunday. But I think Eskew has more than earned his spot in that weekend rotation with what he was able to do on Sunday. You know, going back to Arkansas the past weekend as well, a good outing there, despite the fact that South Carolina did end up losing that game. Carolina jumps up a few spots in the AP poll from 24th up to 15th. They have not released the latest field of 64 projections, but I imagine, if nothing else, South Carolina is still going to be sitting at that number 15 spot, projected to host regional, maybe even moving up a few spots there as well. And again, lots of opportunities ahead of them, playing good teams in Tennessee and Georgia, as well as a tough road series this weekend at Missouri to continue to climb and put themselves in a better position for the postseason ahead.
Yeah, no doubt. And Tyler, you mentioned earlier, well, if you look at the RPI, you don't have to, just off the top of your head, where are Missouri, Georgia, Tennessee? You got any ideas to RPI?
So I can tell you that both Tennessee and Georgia are in the top 10. Let me see where.
That's one of the, yeah, especially like with Georgia, like, you know that they've got the masher.
Sure.
He's going to hit a home run about every game.
Right.
At least.
That's Tyler's favorite player.
Tyler's favorite player. That's right. There you go, Wes. Way to work that in.
I'm scrolling here. I'm trying to see where Missouri is. They are certainly far down the list. So.
Well, they're last in the division.
Yeah.
But I think they swept Florida. You know, Missouri is one of those weird places to play.
It's never easy.
Where you go on the road. You know, I remember Kentucky used to be like this. Like, even before that, they've obviously taken a big step up. They're really, really good this year. But there's times in the years past where, we're going to Lexington. That should be two wins, maybe a sweep, and then you go there and just play terrible.
Right.
It's kind of a house of horrors. Missouri is one of those tough places to play, but you start looking at it and you go, what if you can win two of those series? What if you can win all three?
Right.
I mean, you get the sense like you're in really, really good shape if you can do that.
Yeah, absolutely. And hopefully we build momentum coming off the series win against Kentucky that, theoretically got over the hump for something that Coach Kingston has talked about a lot these past couple weeks. And you got a midweek game against East Tennessee, and then before you head on the road out there to come up. By the way, Missouri clocks in at 92 in the RPI, so not terrible, but certainly not up to the standard of what you've seen these past couple weeks, but hopefully don't take them too lightly going into this weekend. We will come back. We'll wrap up today's edition of the Gamecock Central Takeover Hour presented by Firehouse Subs. A lot of stuff happening in the transfer portal from a football and basketball standpoint. We'll have that coming up. Gamecock Central Takeover Hour here on the game. Welcome back in. Gamecock Central Takeover Hour presented by Firehouse Subs. Tyler Head, West Metro, Chris Clark along with you for a few more minutes here. As always, you can check us out on the Game TV, sponsored by our friends over at Shepherd's Glass and powered by Integrated Media. And Integrated Media can do a whole lot of things for you, not just camera setups. And Chris, you can always tell us more about that.
Yeah, they've been to my home. They've been to Wes Mitchell's home, and they can come to your home or your business and outfit you with anything that you need from an audiovisual standpoint. All around the state, really, guys, whether you need something as simple as mounting a new TV. Just yesterday, actually, wife and I were looking around the house, and I'm like, I've got at least two spots that I could get Integrated Media to mount a new TV. And in reality, I probably got even more. We were at Firehouse Subs the other day, and we're like, there's this awesome mural. Remember that?
Yep.
Like, they could turn this into a massive TV or even a TV wall. And if you want some inspiration for that man cave or just any audiovisual stuff around your house, if you like to geek out on that like me, Integrated Media Columbia on Instagram and Facebook is how you can find them. Give them a call, 803-948-8327 or integratedmediainc.com.
Lost in the shuffle of the baseball and the draft over the weekend, Lamont Paris continues to cook in the transfer portal. Got Jordan Butler out of Missouri a week ago. And Nick Pringle, somebody that was highly sought after when he entered the transfer portal, officially committed to the Gamecocks over the weekend. A couple of bigs coming in, already playing in the SEC, obviously, and should find good roles for this team coming up next season.
Yeah, guys, I would say this felt like South Carolina's top big target out of the portal in terms of just the guys that were realistic and also had some mutual interest. And so a big weekend for South Carolina. They would have loved to go 2-for-2 on transfer portal guys over the weekend. Of course, as people probably know by now, Jameer Brickus, the point guard, commits to Villanova. That was really a tight one that went back and forth from what we understand down the stretch over the weekend. But with Nick Pringle, this is someone who, like I said, big target for South Carolina. They essentially are replacing three starters from that team that went to the tournament last year. And I think Pringle is the guy who could come in, be an athletic defender at that five spot, and allow CMB, who we've talked about maybe having a little more range than he was asked to show this past season, maybe being someone who could be a little bit more in of a B.J. Mack role like we saw this past year from B.J., this, I believe, kind of would open CMB up to that a little bit. And really, I think for the most part, you can see how this staff has sort of started to close out this recruiting class. And now the one big spot they're going to have to fill, they can put all their energy into going out, as we've seen that they're trying to do right now, add that big portal guard to kind of complete this cycle for them.
And it's another guy that, you know, is from the state of South Carolina, obviously went to Alabama or started off at Wofford, then went to Alabama these past couple seasons. But it's another in-state guy that Lamont Paris is able to return home, in addition to getting the big talent out of the state, CMB a season ago, now Cam Scott after decommitting from Texas. Like, he is truly building a nice, fertile recruiting ground here in the state of South Carolina, where we know there is so much good at basketball talent. And hopefully that'll continue to translate with more success for this basketball program.
Yeah, it's, you look at it and you got to be excited about the offseason that they've had because, I mean, with Pringle, you get an athletic big who can defend and finish at the rim. And certainly, I mean, hey, just go online and look up some of the stuff he did against the SEC and against Clemson and the Elite Eight. Man, this guy can really help you. You think about him playing alongside CMB in year two for CMB. CMB maybe stepping out a little bit more. We know apparently he has the range. Him kind of not being B.J. Mack, right, but like being able to step out a little bit more and take on a little bit more of that shooting you're going to be missing with the departure of Mack. Very exciting there. You think about adding Jordan Butler, who's a guy that probably has a little ways to go, but certainly has the upside. He has more size. The missing piece, as Wes just laid out, you got to go find a guard. Dakota Lafue going to Georgia, that was the, I think Wes nailed that one. That was the school that was kind of the one to watch, the threat. He's from Georgia, One of his teammates committed there, and you miss out on Jahmyr Bricus. So it's an important piece, but you look at some of the other, how resourceful they've been, the job they've done in the portal. If they can go out and find somebody there that fits what they want, this would be a really, really good off-season class.
Yeah, guys, I think they've got to find that sort of lead guard at this point. And I don't necessarily think he has to be some big name, highly recruited guy. I mean, Talon Cooper came in, and I think we all looked at what Talon had done and sort of the number of assists and the floor general attributes. And I think it wasn't like everybody was saying, oh, who's this Talon Cooper guy? This is a terrible pickup. So I think to give it credit, like, we looked at Talon and like, okay, I see what they're going for here. But I don't think necessarily this has to be a big name player who can come in and score 20 points a game. I think at this point you're looking for somebody who can be that floor general. And I imagine there's already a list of a couple of guys that now become the priority at that spot. But certainly it did seem like they wanted Bricus, and guys, they were right there about to land him over the weekend. And Villanova sort of, I would say, kind of rolled in the back door at the final minute, it felt like.
Regardless, doing good on the transfer portal front for Lamont Paris and the basketball team. Speaking of transfer portal, coming up tomorrow, it's the end of the window to enter your name in the transfer portal for football. We'll dive into that and assess where South Carolina stands with all of that coming up tomorrow. It is the Gamecock Central Takeover Hour, presented by Firehouse Subs. Coming up next, Halftime Show with Terry Ford on your Monday. Here on the Game.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.